Moncrief on News Talk.
Among the many voices and opinions about the housing crisis, there is a school of thought that we should embrace more apartment living like they do in many parts of Europe. But the Irish psyche seems to be hardwired into the idea of the house with a garden. The architect Fionnuala May has lived in a flat, as we used to call them, on Mountjoy Square in Dublin for the past 43 years and raised a family there. Also, she works for Fingal County Council, so she knows the sharp edge of providing homes for people. Fionnuala, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon to you.
So when you moved in there 43 years ago onto Mountjoy Square, what have you got there? Is it big enough? Because I suppose people listening go, sure, you wouldn't be able to swing a cat, probably.
Oh, no. We're very lucky, I suppose, in that the houses on Mountjoy Square are typical Georgian houses, very, very, very generous in spaces. And we live on the top floor of one of those houses.
Yeah.
And it's perfectly adequate space for us.
Yeah.
Then, in the middle, and now.
Yeah.
So it has adapted to us as our family have grown and grown away and all the rest of it over the years.
Yeah.
I suppose it's not typical. It wouldn't be typical.
Not
I
for
am
Ireland,
quite.
No. But if you were living in Germany, say, it would be completely
yeah.
typical.
Or Paris or any other yeah. European city, it would be considered quite normal.
Yeah.
I suppose we fell into it. We liked it. Both myself and my husband are architects. So we appreciated the building we're in. We're both involved in conservation. So I suppose we were living what we were extolling the virtue of to yes. our clients and in our work.
And the building that you still live in, was it all family units on various floors?
No, the house was originally bought by my late father-in-law in the 1960s. And I think when he bought it, there was something like 25 different tenancies in the building.
You know, crikey,
each room back in that time was let separately. So that's not the case anymore, needless
yeah.
to remark. So it's we live on the top floor and the rest of the building is offices.
Yeah, and when kids came along, did you think, well, we need a bit more space, or did you not think that?
Well, probably we didn't have the means or inclination to move at that time. But no, I suppose we just liked it. We were very lucky. We had great family support and okay, you dread carrying things up and down the stairs.
Yeah,
if
I'd
you do
imagine
a big
that
shop,
was an issue, yeah.
You're a bit puffed by the time you get to the top. But no, it didn't. As I said, we were very, very lucky and it is a generous space that we live in. So we had two girls and we lived, the four of us there, very happily.
Yeah, and I suppose you did have the advantage that you were on Mountjoy Square, so there's a park there in the
yes,
middle.
Exactly.
So that would be good for the kids.
Yes, absolutely. The park and the outdoor space afforded by that was absolutely fantastic. Still is fantastic. Dublin City Council have a great new plan for its restoration and upgrade because it is so well used. There's about 1,500 people who live on Mountjoy Square, believe it or not, in the various apartment buildings around. And then there's housing blocks on Great Charles Street and on Fitzgibbon Street. So there's a lot of people living in the area. I still think there should be more, but there are definitely lots of people. And you've seen the recently in the news about how many people live on Gardiner Street. And so they all use the park, I think, effectively as their living room.
Mm.
You know, that it's there's people in that park from early in the morning until late in the evening. And it is so well used. So that is an important resource. And it's a wonderful thing that we have that from when Mountjoy Square was built.
Yeah, because even if anyone who's even familiar with Mountjoy Square, that part of at the centre of Dublin, you wouldn't even be aware people were living there a lot of the time.
No, you know? No. I think a lot of it there's a lot, I think, of short-term lets. I think that is the thing that I regret most is, I suppose, think it could be better, is that there's not a lot of people who will stay for a long time. It's seen as a transient. So even the private rented accommodation, I think, is fairly quick turnaround on it.
Mm.
You know, I don't get to see the same people for years on end coming out of down the steps as you walk by, you know, in
yeah.
different buildings. So I think there is a fair amount of turnover, as you might say.
Well, that's an interesting point then, I suppose, because, and applies not just to where you live, but I suppose in the centre of all towns and cities across Ireland. Why don't we have in the centre of towns a kind of a proposition for people just to think we can make a home here?
Yeah, and I mean, we do. They tell us we need 55,000 new homes every year, which is the size of Galway.
Mm.
We have, and by the government are giving us targets of 300,000 by 2030. So we need, and the new build is, as we all know, is hard to deliver, as we've seen in the last number of years. I know that from working in the public sector myself. But some would say the answer to this town centre living is hiding in plain sight. You know, we have a lot of vacant and derelict buildings in our towns.
Mm.
And I don't know if you looked at some of the coverage of the St. Patrick's Day parades yesterday, coming from every town, it seemed to me, in Ireland, all full of buildings that are unoccupied or underoccupied. And then gaps in streets, you know, where you have small sites that could be developed. And I think we are missing a trick there. There's potentially, you know, 100, 150,000 units that could be retrofitted there perfectly adequately for either for single people, couples, or indeed families. And in a lot of towns, the nature of the Irish plot that a house is built on is quite long, is narrow, but it is quite long very often. So you do have the opportunity to have a garden or a yard or outdoor space that's private to you.
Mm.
So if you're a single occupancy in a two-storey house on a street. And I think it's an opportunity that has been missed. Now, the government are trying to encourage it more. There's grants for bringing back derelict houses. There's energy upgrades. There's Croí Cónaithe. There are other measures. So I think the government have recognised it, but I think you're right. There is something in our psyche that we're just a bit wary of. I think we've forgotten how to live in towns.
Mm. But we used to live in towns.
Did.
That's the
we
thing.
We did. And I think we could go back to that. And in fact, anybody where I work in North County Dublin, you know, when you talk to people I think the most successful towns are the ones where there's lots of people living. And if you talk to people, they love it.
Mm.
And they identify with their towns just as much as anybody identifies with their home place. And they're terribly loyal to it and they love it. And I've been involved in a few projects that have seen where people have converted shops or moved into houses that had fallen out of use. And they really love it as well.
Yeah, and you can, and there is a direct correlation, or is there, between the amount of people who live in the centre of a town or a city and the amount of economic activity that goes on, the amount of coffee shops and pubs and et cetera.
Yeah, now I know that the way we use towns is slightly different. We all don't, you know, go out and buy what we need to eat every day. We all do the big shop and all of the rest. So I suppose the commercial nature of towns has changed slightly. But there are still the businesses, and there is the thing that if you build it, they will come. If people live in the town, then the businesses filter back in to service those people. And they mightn't be the same kind of businesses we had 40 years ago, but they will be businesses because people will want them, and there'll be economic for the business people to operate there.
Yeah. And just going back to the derelict sites, and there is a group that kind of monitors all this, and they've come up with similarly stark figures. What's the legal problems there? Or can it be so many different sorts of legal problems?
Yeah.
It's hard to get your head around.
I think we do in a lot of ways, we've kind of an impenetrable forest of building regulations that stop us unlocking those doors, as it were. You know, so it's seen as very high risk. There's liability, you know, and all of that causes delays. So people don't see the end of the line of their project. And you know, I mean, if they're gone, we lose the historic character of our towns. I think the answer is in clearer guidance. And we have a multiplicity of interpretations. So what you're told in Dublin mightn't be what you're told in Kerry or in Galway or Donegal or any other county. So I think we could improve on that. I think we could make up a catalogue of approved strategies that every county planning authority would be happy with that, to remove the guesswork for people. I think we could do things like maybe clinics in local authorities where, you know, an owner or somebody who's interested in such a project can go and get advice. I represent the RIAI, the Architects of Ireland. I know that architects are very interested in this level of work and are ingenious in the ways they come up, can work with to get these projects working. And I think we just need a bit more education, I suppose, throughout all of us, through architects, local authority officers like myself, owners, contractors, and that we all kind of, that the mystery is taken out of it and the risk and the perception that it's, they're all these projects are money pits and they just don't pay. You know, so I think we do have a bit of work to do that on that aspect of it. But it makes sense because if you, I've read somewhere that it costs 115,000 to provide public infrastructure for a new house on a greenfield.
Yeah.
So if you're building or rebuilding in a town, that infrastructure is already there. You know, the roads, the streets.
Well, that's that 115 grand, I suppose. Yeah. That comes out of the exchequer. That's the government pays
exactly,
that.
Exactly, yes.
So you could see there's an argument for, you know, give people 100 grand if they're going to do up some place, some derelict site. Is there any law anywhere in the world, a kind of a use it or lose it, in the sense if somebody, if we know the owner of a site in the centre of a town and they've just left it there for 20 years, that some pressure can be brought to bear in terms of that's, you know, you're taking the mickey now.
There is the derelict site legislation, which is starting to be applied and the ability of local authorities to compulsory purchase properties. It's not hugely used yet, but I think it could be.
And as far as I understand, even when they've identified people, for some reason, fines haven't been enforced. And,
I don't think it's maybe giving back what it might give.
Yeah.
At this, but it is. There's no doubt about it that we are losing out by not using these buildings.
Yeah. One texter says Section 23 tax reliefs were ended in 2006 and dereliction has grown in the 20 years since. They cannot be viably renovated without major tax breaks. Is that a point?
There possibly is a point.
Yeah.
But then the government have, as I said, have taken on the thing of making grant aid available through various mechanisms. So they are trying to help the owner. But sometimes, you know, you do have to spend money to bring these buildings back. There's no doubt about it. And you see, the problem is, I think, that they've been left for so long.
It gets more expensive.
More expensive the longer they are left. They fell out of use, I suppose, when we had huge emigration from the 1950s, 60s, 70s, and indeed into when I graduated in the 80s even. So buildings just weren't maintained, weren't occupied, and now a lot of them cost an awful lot to bring back into use. It's not impossible, but there are costs involved.
Mm.
But then we have the payoff of people living in our town, paying rent, enjoying the town and bringing in the business.
And to ask a difficult question to an architect, that you can see instances where you have a building and perhaps the facade of it is still reasonably okay and you want to maintain that character. But, you know, as soon as you go in the front door, the place is falling apart.
Mm.
And that, you know, but there are regulations where you have to maintain that character, which adds to the cost. Is there an argument in many cases where, feck it, well, you know, people need a place to
that's
live?
That's not always the case. I mean, there's a lot of what I'll call ordinary, decent, historic structures on streets in towns in Ireland that don't have any designation on them that means you have to keep them exactly as they are. Sometimes we have architectural conservation areas, so right enough, you have to keep the outside appearance of your building so that it marries in with the rest of the character of the town and the street. But most times you can reorder and rebuild and add on and change the interior of those houses as far as your budget and the imagination of your architect and your desires as a client to get what you want in order to make yourself a wonderful home in a town that you like.
Yeah. Fionnuala, thanks a million for coming in to talk to us today. That was Fionnuala May there, an architect, resident of Mountjoy Square for the last 43 years.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.